Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, they will tailor a quote to your exact needs, saving you money on your annual bike, moped or scooter insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Now, today's guest, quite frankly, is living the dream. This is someone who makes a living out of what they love doing, reviewing bikes, the best bikes all around the world, to her gazillion followers on Instagram and YouTube. It is, of course, the one and only username Kate.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
No, the pleasure's all ours, Kate. You know that. Thank you so much for coming on board. Part of the Bikesure family, of course. It's wonderful to be able to sit there and chat. Repping, absolutely. We should all have our t-shirts on, shouldn't we? to get us up to speed, because Ewan and I were chatting before we start recording and ploughing through the content that you've got both on Instagram and on YouTube. And again, the main thing that we got together was a shared jealousy and an envy of what you get to do and where you get to do it and the bikes you get to go on and the people you get to talk to. So how does a girl from Bolton end up doing what you do?
Do you know, I ask myself that every single morning when I wake up. Like, how am I in this position? Not a complaint, just an observation. But it's just mental. I'm literally just living the dream. Oh, gosh, I've got an Amazon delivery. They can wait. They can wait.
Is it a new bike?
Bike gear.
Exactly. If it's a new bike, I'll answer it, but it's not. So, yeah. Literally, it just started with uploading videos to YouTube. And not with the aim of being a YouTuber. I never wanted to be a YouTuber. I just knew that I wanted to work within the bike industry because it's where my passion was. And yeah, it just kind of, it's knocking louder. It just kind of snowballed out of control. And it's just got where we are. So,
okay, was there a sense of looking? We all gravitate towards the things that we know and love and get a bit of rapport with.
Yeah.
But given the kind of niche that you've managed to put into YouTube and obviously branch out and get so many people involved and watching what you do, were you looking at YouTube thinking there's no one really like me that's doing this type of stuff? Or was it just literally, I love doing it, I want to share what I've got to say about bikes and biking and everything to do with it?
As the channel grows and you get more subscribers, you do become more acutely aware that that is a factor. Like, you do have a unique selling point. You are offering something that maybe a lot of people aren't offering. But initially, that wasn't like at the forefront of my mind. It was literally, I'm just going to upload videos of my holiday so my grandma and granddad can catch up with the antics, see what we're doing. And then also for me, it's like a bit of a video diary that I've got it to look back on. And, you know, you can look back at some of the early stuff and it's absolutely dreadful. It's just all like really loud, annoying, non-copyright music over the top of riding footage and stuff. So it is quite funny to see kind of where it's developed and how my life has led me to produce the videos that I'm producing. But yeah, it never started like that at all.
Maybe that's the key, because honestly, Instagram, I used to think Twitter was easier to build a follower, but Instagram, YouTube, it's not easy. But maybe that's the key, the fact that you're honest, you're refreshing, you were doing it because you love it. A lot of people, I think they try too hard, you know, oh, people want to see this. But because you kept it real, like you said, uploading stuff for your grandparents to see and your friends to see where you've been, maybe that's the key. But I've got to ask, in terms of an industry which a lot of people would perceive as male dominated, was it even harder for you then getting into the motorbiking world where people might not take a young female as serious as a male, perhaps? I mean, has that been a kind of barrier you've come up against, or have people, well, obviously they've welcomed you, but was it hard to start with?
Do you know what? It's very much a double-edged sword in that regard. There are pros to being a female in this space and there are cons, of course. So I guess I'll start with some of the pros. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Men like to look at girls. It's just how the world works, isn't it? I mean, don't get me wrong. There's guys that like to look at guys, and fair play. You know, we all like what we like, but it is a bit more of an advantage. Now, then you can go down one of two routes. You can go down the woo route.
Yeah.
Getting the narcs out, all that jazz. Or you could go down the route of, you know, wanting to be taken seriously, wanting to prove that, you know, girls can know, you know, the same, if not more, than guys. And I had kind of, Like where I started, I was selling motorcycles as my YouTube took off. And again, female in sales, sometimes you feel a little bit on the back foot that someone will come in and, you know, they want to just tell you what they know and, you know, how amazing their knowledge is at motorcycles. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to learn this product range like an absolute nerd. And there's not going to be a stone unturned and nobody can come in and tell me something that, one, I don't know about this particular bike. Obviously, if you get real technical, yeah, but sure. But facts, you know, stats, specs, stuff like that. I thought then I'm going to ride them. I'm going to know what I'm talking about. So no one can accuse me of just like trying to be a girl and using that to kind of, you know, get far or get where I'm at. You know, I want to be taken seriously. So, yeah, I kind of went down the seeking knowledge route of all the bikes that I've sold and learned. So, yeah, I suppose when then people come in, and again, it is predominantly males, don't get me wrong, I sold a few women, but a lot more men, you know, then you kind of get a sense of satisfaction deep within that they're taking you seriously and they're like, oh gosh, this girl knows what she's doing. So that's kind of satisfying. The growth is slower when you go down that route. You know, there's a lot of bellies out, boobs out, bums out on Instagram from girls, and they get massive followings. But to me, it's about a community and getting the right people on board. And I don't necessarily think that that audience who are consuming that kind of content are the content that I'm striving for. So I guess, you know, it's a pro in the sense that, you know, guys will be like, oh yeah, this is a girl, better to look at, better to, you know, I don't know. I'm just, I mean, I'm not saying, and I don't think of myself as anything special, of course, but, you know, it is just a biological, you know, observation. But from a negative point of view, yeah, you kind of, you do have to work a bit harder to be taken seriously. You do get dismissed a lot, especially when I was in bike sales. It's probably why I felt like I had to work harder and strive for knowledge, because, you know, they don't want a girl to sell you a bike because they think you're not going to know anything and, you know, it's just not great. But yeah, it is a bit of a double-edged sword. But, you know, I get comments to this day on YouTube like, why aren't you in the kitchen? It's like...
utterly ridiculous.
But then, you know what? I used to take things proper to heart, like real thin-skinned, because I'm a chronic people pleaser. So the minute someone was like, oh, I don't like that, I'm like, oh, knife to the heart. Oh, I tried so hard. Like, I want you to like me, please. Like, I'm trying. And then I realised that you just can't please some people. And some people are just nasty and they're going to be nasty. And it's not a reflection on me. It's more of a sad reflection on them, because... really, you're spending your Saturday night to tell me at 10 p.m. to get in the kitchen? What are you doing that's leading you to be writing that on Saturday night? Like, go live your life. Like, do cool things.
It's an amazingly balanced way of doing it. And I think this is probably why this, what kind of how we ingest media and how we go after stuff to look for entertainment is inherently different. 30 years ago, you'd watch a program on a Saturday night, and if you didn't like it, you just turned it off or turned over. You wouldn't then get your phone out to go, I'm going to tell these people exactly how much I don't like what I'm still watching, which is crazy, as you say.
It's such a waste of energy and
there's
time.
There's so many better things to do with your time. But it sounds, Kate, like the way you've – it's that key word that you've used about building, really. This is a longevity thing for you, it feels like. A passion project, which 100%. It sounds like you want to last forever. And like you say about the certain ways of doing it, which jumps your numbers very, very quickly, but there's no substance in that. If people are coming to you with, can you take a look at this bike? Well, yeah, because I'll give you a detailed breakdown of what I find to be good, bad, or indifferent about this bike with the knowledge that comes with thorough research. And that's why I sit there and watch your videos and fascinated by that side of it. And also, you talk about being a people pleaser. There is that instant
chronic,
but you picking up bikes with your dad. You know what I mean? You're watching them go, this is, you're really, really invested in it going, what happens next and where you're going? And it's a real part of that. So we asked you about where it starts and where you are now. Is there a tipping point with that chicken and egg scenario where you're getting more traction, you're getting more people involved? And then where do the brands come in? Where does suddenly you're knocking on the door that doesn't open to being a person that strides through several doors that are always open to you, and progressively more doors are opening. Where does that tipping point come into it?
Comes with time. Time and consistency. Yeah. And, you know, you've got to enter this space without a sense of entitlement. I feel like that's where a lot of people go wrong. They get big numbers quite fast and then the entitlement creeps in. But I think as long as you always stay honest to yourself, humble, you know, you assess opportunities that come your way. You can't say yes to everything because you don't just want to be a walking billboard. You've got to keep some integrity. You've just got to, you know.
That must be tough though, Kate. So it's about when you go from working from a jump off point to where you want to get to. Mm-hmm. It's almost a bit like freelance work. And you and I know all about this work because I'm the same. Yeah, I can do it. Yeah. And then you work out how you get to do all the things that you said yes to. So to be discerning, it must be quite tough.
It is, because you find yourself being in a position where you have to say no to things that people would give a limb to do.
Yeah.
And that's horrible because you're like, oh my gosh, you feel like you have to say yeah, because otherwise, like, you shouldn't be doing it. You should give the opportunity to someone else. And that's kind of how I see saying no to things. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, you know what? Like, I've been on launches. I've been in positions because other people have said no. And that's been wonderful for me. So, you know, me saying no isn't necessarily a bad thing because it gives someone else an opportunity to do something that might be something of their wildest dreams. So just got to kind of look at it like that. And yeah, you got to look at the things, one, like the things that you really want to do, but also ultimately now I'm full time and I have been for 3.5 years. You do have to look at it with a bit more of a business mindset, with a bit more, you know, conscious thought as to, is this going to pay the mortgage or will this lead to me getting opportunities that will pay the mortgage and stuff like that? So yeah, you've got to think more about it as you step into the full-time like sphere of things.
You talk about paying the mortgage and like Prots alluded to the fact you've gone about it the right way. The credibility you've gained and you continue to gain because your knowledge is right and you haven't gone for the short-term gains. You've looked at the bigger picture. What would it have been if it wasn't this? Because as I introduced at the start, you know, you live in the dream. Surely you do. You clearly love bikes. You surround yourself with people who love bikes and you like to spread that knowledge to other people. But if it hadn't been bikes, what would it have been? Was there a secondary career? Because as you said, you fell into this. You didn't think it was ever going to be a career, but it is paying the mortgage. So if you weren't doing this, what was your dream as a young girl?
Do you know what? I never really had one. How sad is that?
That's all right.
People grow up and they're like, I want to be a vet. I want to be a doctor. I want to save lives. I'm like, I have no idea why I was put on this planet. And I've just got to fumble along and figure it out. And hopefully what will be, and it'll all work out. And that's how I've put along. So I've been a pot washer at a pub. That was in the times when I was like 15 and, you know, people could still smoke in pubs and I wasn't a smoker. And like, I'd also take the food out, like bit of a pot wash / waitress. And they'd open the doors of the pub and you'd see the smoke rolling. And I'd just go, hold my breath and like charge out with the things and try and do it as fast as possible. So I could run back into the kitchen and be like, and like, just try not to breathe all this secondhand smoke. I've been a B&Q cashier, which I actually really liked. I enjoyed that job. I've worked in distribution, like global resources, recruitment. Hate that. Was not cut out for it, honestly. And the boss, the lady boss, she was an absolute cow. I hope she's watching this. She's awful. And then I thought, you know what? I need to get into the bike industry because I love bikes. That's all I'm bothered about. I can't really see me doing anything else. So I'll try and get my foot in the door. So I started in a very, very small warehouse because I had no motorcycle experience at all in the industry whatsoever. So I thought I've almost got to work for pittance to try and just get that experience. So I literally, I'm not going to name names, but I worked at a motorcycle warehouse where I was like, you know, £3.60 an hour. Yeah. And I was like, I had to lock up at the end of the day. And it was like dark and an industrial state in the depths of Manchester and like no bosses or anything to be seen. And like my fellow Mike at the time, who that's how long I've been with him. We've been together like 13 years. He was like, I don't want you working it. Like, it's not safe. You're literally locking up at 6 PM in a rough part of Manchester on your own with a shop that's got thousands of pounds worth of stock at. Like, I don't like it. And I'm like, you're right. I need to get out of this. So I stuck it out for 6 months and then it was something that I could put on my CV. Mm-hmm. So then I went to another bike shop, managed to get in there. And then it was just, you know, parts, clothing, accessories. I always kind of looked at the sales boys with starry eyes, like, I'd love to do that. But it was always, nope, you got to hang this, you know, size small up, extra large. You need to stock take. And nothing wrong with that, of course, nothing wrong. But that's just like how I started. And, you know, different, I went to different companies and a lot of them ended up closing through liquidation. Like I was in clothing at the Rocket Centre in Blackburn. Don't know if you guys are aware of that one. That was a proper beast of a store. It was amazing. And the boss, Ross, he was so cool. In wintertime, when it was icy on the car park, he used to let us go and do donuts on the car park. He'd like cheer us on. Like, it was just such a gangster like operation. I sort of loved it. I was there in my slammed Disastra, not even Astra, Disastra, just like trying to attempt feeble donuts. So it's hilarious. So worked there, clothing, you know, was up there for ages. And I was just looking at the balcony one day and sales lads were doing the thing and they were like, a position's come up. And I was like, ooh. And then Stuart, the boss, was like, we're going to advertise for it. And then all the salespeople were like, you've got someone up there who's always not doing, she's not doing a job because she's staring at what we're doing because she wants to be part of it. You should really give her a chance. And he was like, Kate? And I'm like, yeah. So he gave me a chance. Yeah, please pick me. And then, ended up selling. Got my foot in sales that way. It was excellent. That was like proper getting to ride like the demo bikes as well, which helped naturally with the YouTube because you put a camera on, you can ride first time on a Super Duke and there's an absolute wobbler like, oh my God. And it just kind of progressed from there. Rocket Centre went into liquidation, you know, found other jobs at Harley Davidson selling motorcycles and got poached to go over to BMW. I just built the career like that really whilst doing YouTube on the side, making the most of the opportunities to ride the demo bikes. And then it was, okay, we saw you ride this, can you try and ride this? And I'm like, nice. Oh well, yes, actually, because Rocket Centre at the time sold like Aprilia, KTM, you know, Suzuki, Piaggio, like there was just so many models to take advantage of. So yeah, it just kind of snowballed out of control that way really.
So then Kate, when it comes to as you say, 3.5 years now, it was a decision you talk about, you fell a mic and there's a family involved as well. Was there a minute where you said, just a quick bit of housekeeping, everybody, I'm going to go do this full time? And everyone goes, okay. And was there any pushback? Because it sounds, the way you've described it there, and I'm only thinking because you mentioned about working in a warehouse at 15. My daughter's just done a GCC, 16, she's at sixth form. So I'm thinking, right, in a, this will all fly by, and if she's going there to there. But the real, you said you didn't know what you wanted to do, but there's an ambition and drive there. There's no sense of being rudderless. So you've always gone there and then moved around, and then you get to a point where this incarnation of what you do as a profession is a proper option. Was there any pushback at all from the people around you saying, maybe not that's the way to go?
Maybe from strangers, yeah, but the people that know me know that, like, I'm not daft. I like to think I'm not daft. Some would argue against that.
You don't come across daft at all. I mean, there's three people on this. Two of them are daft. One's definitely not daft.
Yeah, it was all very thought out and calculated. And I did a talk at the ABR Festival and it was all about, like, how I got started and stuff like that. That's on my YouTube if you want to check it out. But I will tap into that because I think it's quite important for people to know that there's got to be calculated thought between such, you know, having that stability and leaving it all behind. But thankfully, with the series of events that led up to when I left, I was in a position to give myself the best chance of it working. So how that kind of manifested was I was selling motorcycles, BMWs in Manchester. And I had absolutely loved that job. It was like my dream job. Like, the managers were incredible, the dealer principal, the sales manager. Like, they were proper building me up. They trusted me to do deals so I didn't have to constantly run to them and say, oh, can I do this? Can I have this much money off? Can I to secure this? They knew that I wanted right by the customer, but I also wasn't going to mug the business off as well. Like, I'd try and get the best middle ground for everyone. So they just trusted me and it was fine. It was great. Love that job. Excelled. You know, I don't mean to blow my own trumpet. I think in 1 month, I turned over in June £660,000 for the company. Turnover, not profit, of course.
That's a lot of motorbikes.
Yeah. Well, it's BMW, so you've got R1250, GS, GSAs at the time, RTs, K1600s. You know, there's stuff out there that's, you know, that's why the turnover was so high, because they are big kind of price tag bikes, aren't they? So, yeah, I was doing that. I was comfortable. I was happy. And I loved it. And I eventually wanted to be like a sales manager there. I wanted to work my way up in the company, because I always thought, you love bikes and you want to work with bikes, but you'll never earn a lot of money doing it. And then all of a sudden the sales world opened and I thought, wow, I actually have a chance to do what I love, surrounded by things that I love, and actually make a decent living. Oh my gosh, like, this is possible. So yeah, I was all set for that. That was great. Mm. COVID hit. And actually, this is a bit of a step back. So when I started the job, I got poached from Harley Davidson in Preston. I started the job, and within 26 days, it was the first lockdown.
Oh, gosh.
So I didn't qualify for furlough. So I was that little nerd that when they were like, right, who wants to sit out on furlough? All the salesmen were like, yeah, I want to get paid £2,000 and do nothing, sat at home, you know, scratching the nads all day, happy days. And I was like, okay. Please let me work. Please, I want to work. And they were like, yeah, but you don't know anything. You're like 26 days in. I'm like, yeah, but watch what I can do. Like, I'll learn every bit of the processes that I need to. I'll work like a crazy person. Please just give me the chance. And they were like, oh, well, she's passionate, she's keen, okay. And they gave me the chance. And I'm going to be really candid and transparent about kind of wages, because I was the only salesperson. So bottleneck of commission was coming to me. Yeah, I was having nervous breakdowns every single day. I was sat behind the van crying and rocking. And then it was like, right, sort yourself out, go back inside, sell some bikes, you know, get it all sorted. And there was three of us in the company. It was the manager, an admin, and me. That was who we were allowed to be in. So grafting. And I was happy to have the nervous breakdowns, because I've always had the rug pulled out from me in all the motorcycle jobs that I've had, whether it's the companies going into liquidation or, you know, horrible bosses, stuff like that. And I've always been ready to jump and adapt. I feel like I'm a little bit of a cockroach. Kind of like that about me. You know, you can't get me down. I'll figure a way to adapt and overcome.
Sounds to me, in a polite way, you're a bit of a bulldog in terms of, you know what you're going to go for in life, and you're going to get there. No, listen, I've just sat listening to you, and I just think you have got some serious drive. Like, it's amazing. Yeah. I think whatever industry you'd be in, you'd win, because you'd find a way to get to the top. And I love the fact, earlier I spoke about, you know, being a female in a male-dominated world, is it tougher? I don't think it comes into question at all. You are going to get to where you want to go in life. And I'd love to find out where you want to be in the next 5 years, because God help anyone in your way, because it seems to me like if you want something, you're going to get it. And I think that's why people respect you so much, because you're clearly a hard worker. This isn't something that's fallen on your lap. You're not a silver spoon case. You know, you have studied hard and worked to get where you have. And I think people must really respect you for that.
Yeah, I like to think so. I just have a real desire to like make my parents proud, make my family proud, make me proud. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, I kind of just run off that. But going back to the bottleneck situation of, you know, getting me in a position to comfortably walk away from the job, some of them months were like £6,000 months. I've never seen that in my life. I've gone from my £3, you know, 60 an hour, to some £6,000 months that were coming in. And I was like, oh my gosh, this won't last forever, you know. And there's a lot of people going through a real rough time. I feel like COVID was either horrific or it made opportunities for people.
Yeah,
and I thought though that no one would be buying motorcycles. Who in the right mind is buying motorcycles when there's so much uncertainty in the world? So I was like, I know I'm volunteering to work. It's mainly just to keep myself busy. And, you know, prove that and learn some stuff. And people coming in, barely any finance, just like cash jobbies. I'm like, you guys are mental, but I'm not complaining. Here's your bike, sir. Here's your bike, miss. you know, sending them off. But I knew it wouldn't last forever. I knew things would settle down. I knew salesmen would come back in. Then when salesmen get wind of what I'm doing, then they're like, oh, I want a piece of that pie. Like, oh no, but you was happy to stay at home and make your banana bread and get collect your little $2,000 for doing nothing, weren't you? Yeah. So they heard that, they wanted a piece of it quite naturally. So they start coming back. And then, you know, I was sitting on that money. Like, I am not a spender. I am super conservative with money, live very, very modestly, you know, very frugal. And I'm really lucky that I have my partner, Mike, who we're exactly the same mindset. So we're in a position all the time where, you know, we're looking at saving that money for a rainy day in case, because you don't know what's going to happen. I get joy in looking at a sunset. I get joy in sitting on my couch with my cat on my lap with a brew. Like, my week's made then. I'm absolutely buzzing. I don't need to seek it in material things. And obviously the material things that I like, motorbikes, which I get to ride a lot on loan basis. So I'm not spending my money there, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of stockpiling it, saving it all, squirreling it away. And then the two managers, the dealer principal and manager that I absolutely adored, shout out to Craig Sane and Phil McNellis, absolute legends. Phil McNellis, I think it's with Triumph now, and Craig with BMW. But yeah, they were amazing, and they both left at the same time. No.
Mm.
And then new management come in, and it went downhill. It wasn't the place that I started. And I was really kind of gutted about that, because I saw myself, like, I'd never had a direction in my life before, and all of a sudden I can see my future, what it looks like, you know, motorcycle sales, you know, having, like, working for a dealership and being proud that I'm making the best dealership. No, it all got scrapped, because I went from being top salesperson to fearing selling because something would always go wrong. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the added pressure in the back of your mind that you are growing on YouTube. So at that point, I was probably on about 30,000 subscribers. Well, you don't want people coming on your YouTube and going, oh, Kate mugged me off. She did me a right deal. And I'm like, I can't help it. Like, this is coming from my managers. Like, I am just the middleman. Like, please just don't come for me. So yeah, that was like in the back of my mind, that chronic people pleasers, like, like, it's a horrific thought to me. So I thought, how can I get out of this situation? I'm clearly not happy. The highlight of my day is turning up to work on a demo bike. Mm. That should not be the highlight of my day. So, you know, I literally just had one sponsor at the time, I'm pretty sure, which was Bikeshare.
And little ripple for Bikeshare.
So thank you for rescuing me from the situation, Bikeshare. So I rang like my guy there, my guy, sounds so mega, from, you know, the middleman that I deal with, you know, and I just said, look, you pay me a certain amount for X amount of deliverables, and I'm really, really grateful for that. But what if there was a chance that you could double what you pay me and I just double my deliverables? How does that sound? Is that something you consider? And they were like, yeah, it seemed reasonable. I was like, send me a contract and I'll quit my job tomorrow. And they were like, yeah, no stress. And that is how I was able to make the leap into full-timeness. So as I was saying, strangers from the outside probably thought she's crazy.
Hmm.
You know, my family, Mike, people that know me were like, she's been smart. She saved up all the money that, you know, she knew was a rare opportunity for her to get that in her life.
Mm-hmm.
She's put it to one side for a rainy day. She's negotiated to make it so it's a good starting point. And then if it doesn't take off straight away, I could work out between me and Mike what we have and how long we can push it and try and make it work before we think, you know what, I'm going to have to clean toilets, Mike. I have to do something.
How nice was that, though? That moment, Bikeshare showed faith in you. You know, they're obviously happy with what you've already done. And then to go, do you know what? Yeah, give up your job because we're backing you. I mean, that must have been a really like light bulb moment. That, hang on, I'm actually good at this.
Yeah, and it made me think, oh my God, they actually believe that I have something worthwhile to them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have something to offer them that they see a value in. And even if that is, you know, I like to think that I'm not one of these people that, you know, shoves things down people's throats.
No, not so.
And hopefully it doesn't come across like that in the videos.
No, not so.
But they see, you know, they see an opportunity with the monthly views and the reach. So they're in my intro and my outro, and it's hopefully a nice integration and a nice partnership that we have. I was in shared with Byteshare, I think 3 years before I started working with them anyway. So yeah, I've been in shared with them for a while, and yeah, it was just a kind of business match made in heaven.
It does have the feel of something extremely organic, Kate. Let me just do a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping for the podcast. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. And that organic sense of how it's grown, Kate. I mean, you talk about taking the leap. I mean, fast forward to being away in Europe on a Suzuki and being on the continent and planning trips and going away with your mates. And I mean, the more I talk about it, again, that envy starts to seep back into my bones about what is now your job, your life, your work. And as Ewan so excitedly described it and correctly described it, about the kind of the real dream come true type aspect. I mean, how often are you away from home, from the beloved Mike? All right, let's give him another name check.
We need to shout Mike out. Mike's also started a YouTube channel. So it's Mike underscore PYE. And okay, it's perfect for Mike because obviously I get the bikes. Makes sense for Mike to be shared on the bikes because that means we can both ride out on two bikes, get double the filming done. It's more productive.
Right. Okay.
Then he was like, why don't I just camera up? I'm like, why don't you camera up? Just do it, Mike. So, you know, he's growing. He's getting into it. It's funny because when I see his videos, like, he's in his finding his feet era. And I remember when I was kind of in that, where I was like, what's going to work best? How can I work on my delivery? You know, what things can I say? What's going to be my kind of structure and way to plan things? And it's just kind of cool seeing it from like a fresh perspective. It's really cool.
It's cool what you're doing. Like Pratt said, you know, some of the trips you go on, and you said earlier, you don't have to buy big presents because manufacturers want to give you bikes to review and to use. I know you've probably got to be impartial, but does anything spring to mind in terms of a favourite bike you've been on, or the favourite trip,
road trip?
Because I know you recently went with your girls away recently. I mean, that looked mega. I mean, was that the best road trip so far?
It's hard to say what's my best one, because I go on one and I think that can't be topped, and then I go on another and I'm like, that can't be topped. And really, they all can't be topped, but they're all amazing in their own ways. Do you know what I mean? Like, I love going on a trip with Mike because he's my favourite person to ride with, because I know what he's going to do before he's probably decided he's going to do it, and he knows what I'm going to do before it. It's like telepathy. Wow. You know, when you just ride with that one person and you just know, and it's right and you flow, and you don't argue because you're just locked in, and it's just great. So I love that about riding with Mike. It's wicked. But then when I ride with my girls, it's a different dynamic. It's awesome. I'm like, yeah, we're like three like badass ladies. Like, it's so cringy, but like, that's just how you feel when you're out with your girls, you know. And I've got like my mates Lily and Lucia, who, you know, they have a fair bit of experience, you know, riding and stuff like that. So when we go out, you know, it's just a nice dynamic. None of us ever like fighting for like self-appointed alpha femaleness, all that crap. You know, we just all get on. Like, one of us can lead one day, one of us can lead the other day. It just works great. And then I've recently been on a trip with my other mates, Jade Rides and Georgie. And Jade has done lots of solo travel around Europe, you know, so she's kind of hardcore like that. Georgie, on the other hand, is quite new to riding and quite nervous, and I kind of feel a bit like a mother hen. So that's a nice dynamic because I've never had to do that before. And, you know, I'm like, go on, a bit more revs. You got this. Go on. Don't touch front brake. Full walk. Go on. And it's just kind of nice. So, yeah, there's just been so many fantastic, amazing trips, and they're all wicked in their own right that it's literally hard to say what my favourite is. Favourite bike, that's kind of easy. Super Duke, 100%. 1290, 1390, wouldn't care.
Do you have your own bike then at the moment, or because everyone's fallen over themselves to say, come and ride this, would you have a chance to have your own bike?
Well, that's it. Like, I did have my own bike from when I was selling BMWs. I bought myself, and like me and Mike to use, was an R1200 GS triple black called Beatrix. Loved it. But it just ended up being an expensive garage ornament because of the amount of like time we're away, either filming or, you know, traveling or recording on a bike. So it just was collecting dust a little bit and felt quite bad. So when the PCP was up, I I like moved it on to a friend of mine called Chris, who is loving it, and it's actually getting used. And I'm like, yes, go on, Chris. So there's that. But now it's like, it's hard to justify. And again, this goes in with the frugalness, because there are a lot of YouTubers that, you know, they've got, I mean, I'm going to call out Chopsy on this one, like Chopsy, Lamchop Rides, he's got a wild garage of bikes that he owns. You know, you've got people like English Biker Dan, who's bought a Hornet and he's just bought something else. I don't know if he's revealed what he's bought, so I ain't going to spoil that for him or his audience. And, you know, they go down the route of they like to buy a bike so that they can produce consistent content on things. Mm-hmm. Get it, totally. But for me, like, how I operate, I'm just like, I don't know if I can justify it. Like, I'd love a Super Duke, and if I wasn't doing YouTube, I'd 100% have a Super Duke. Really would, and then it would be my toy, and I would get home from probably a rubbish day at work and jump on my bike and go off somewhere. But there's kind of like no real rubbish days at work, so I just ride the bikes. And then, you know, we also need the garage space, because it's all right populating it with all our personal bikes, but it's the loan bikes that, you know, we film on, and they're the money makers for the YouTube AdSense and stuff. So yeah, kind of got to be smart about it. And don't get me wrong, very fortunate, like Suzuki have given me and Mike long-termers. So we have a GT, which I've just come back from the Pyrenees on.
Yeah.
GSXS 1000 GT, mint bike for touring, by the way. It was wonderful. It suited me down to the ground. I could not have actually imagined a better touring bike. And then I've got a GSX 8R on long-term with the potential option to buy it at the end, depending on where I'm at. You know, in a year's time, whether I do want my own little whippersnapper or whatever. And, you know, because you'd be buying it from Suzuki, hopefully they do a decent price. So then, you know, the depreciation worries out of it. If it is sat there, sorry, hang up on that span collar. If it is just, you know, like sat there, you don't have to think, oh, it is an expensive garage ornament that is depreciating as an asset or maybe liability. You kind of don't have to worry about that as much, because, you know, certain financial hits have been taken, I guess, by Suzuki. Love that for them.
You talk with such passion about being out on bikes and the bikes that you get luckily loaned and so, well, not luckily, you deserve it. But can you separate the two in terms of, clearly you go out, you might do a lot of filming, so you're out on bikes a lot. Do you ever just say, right, I'm leaving the cameras at home, forget the YouTubing, I am going for a pleasure ride? I mean, do they go hand in hand? I mean, clearly you love what you do in your reviews anyway, but do you ever just ride for the sake of it? Do you know what? I'm just going to go, not from A to B, I'm just going to get the bike and I'm not going to document it, I'm going to ride. Do you still do that?
So, no. Purely because every moment that I'm out on a bike is an opportunity. And it's really sad, but being self-employed, you know, if you get ill, you need the content in the bank. So I see just riding a bike without a camera as a bit of a wasted opportunity, which is a bit sad. However, I have like come up with a way around this a little bit. So what I'll do is, I mean, a video can only be 30 minutes long, right? So you can only do so much riding. And we've got to ride a little bit to get to nice places here, like from Bolton. So, you know, we've got the Trough, we've got Yorkshire, we've got Peaks, we've got Wales. You know, there's a few things. So what I'll do is I'll try and get all my filming bish bash boshed off, done, like do what I need to do. And then on the way back, I'll find some twisty roads and I'll put the cameras in my backpack and I'll just have a nice little stonk. Nice little stonk around. And then that's like I've scratched the itch of, you know, not having to think about what I'm saying as I'm riding. I can just relax, focus on the road, be at one with it, be zen, be chill, and just enjoy it. So that's how, but we've not really gone out on a bike just for it. We do it once in a blue moon if we get like some particularly sexy bikes where we're like, these are really fun. Let's just have, you know, a rip around some country lanes. We might do it, but it's quite rare, unfortunately.
So given what you said there, Kate, about having a stockpile of content ready to roll, can you give us a little snippet, a little sneak peek of maybe some trips that are coming up that you've already got in the bank, or is it all classified until you drop at the right time?
Not at all. In fact, I'm very haphazard. so like I've done a lot of touring this year. So it started with a Canary Motorcycles tour, who is a channel sponsor. Shout out to them. They're amazing. you know, what's great is when I post the videos, you do get their customers coming on like, these tours are amazing. And it's just nice to for other people to see comments from people that pay their own money to go. And, you know, it makes you feel like you're being backed by a good company, a company that's not going to annoy people and be like, oh, well, she's associated with them. They're this, they're that. Like, Canary Motorcycle Tours are proper good. And, like, you know, they sponsor Teapot One, they sponsor TMF, Andy the Missing and Flyer. So, you know, and the tours are just that good. I would highly recommend anybody that wants to kind of beat winter depression, you know, the snow, the ice, the cold, the rain. You go to Canary Motorcycle Tours and you rip around with them and it's wicked. Like, all your problems just melt away into the sunshine. So, wait, what was the question? Where did I go on from?
And anything coming up that you want to drop
Okay.
As I said, you and I are avid watchers, so we're excited to watch your back catalogue. So we're always excited to know what's coming next.
Fair. So we filmed that and that went live. And then we did a Belgium tour with Kraken Motorcycle Tours. They offered us to go along with them. Again, Belgium, got to ride Spa-Francorchamps.
Wow.
Bucket list circuit. So good. So that went live. And then I went on a girls trip like a day after, flew out to Salzburg from getting back from that trip. We did that tour to Slovakia with Lucia and Lily. That's in the process of going live. But because I've done that many tours, I've kind of dedicated my posting schedule, which is Sunday and Thursday. Thursday is like tour Thursdays now because I've got that many tour videos. So I've got 5 videos because it was like a vlog a day. The first one went live on Thursday. The next one will be tomorrow. Oh, is it Wednesday today, Tuesday? I don't know.
Tuesday.
That's a good question.
On Thursday.
This goes out on a Wednesday. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So in 2 days, part 2 will go live. There's 5 episodes of that. And then after that, it's going to be the Pyrenees trip, which was like full-blown 11-day job. So there'll be, you know, a lot. But it was dramatic, that trip. It was dramatic. Because when you go on a trip with a vegan, it's dramatic. Respectfully, like, I admire Jade's, you know, determination and unwaveringness in her beliefs, but by God, it's difficult. Because have you ever
motorcycling is the easiest part about it, isn't it?
It's flipping, it's just Iberian ham in Spain, everywhere you look. So that led to its challenges, but it was also quite, you know, funny as well. And because Jade's hilarious. And then we've got, you know, other things like we're all YouTubers. So Lily and Lucia, when I go with them, they're more Instagram. So I'm the only one that's like dragging behind, like trying to do my cameras and, you know, trying to get up early to make sure I don't kind of ruin their holiday being the vlogger. But Georgie and Jade are filming for, you know, YouTube as well. So everything takes loads of time and it was just mental. So, yeah, we've got that coming up on Thursdays. Then I'm going to do the North Coast 500 with Georgie shortly. We're going to try and cram a lot into 4 days. So we're going to vlog all that. We're both doing it on Royal Enfields. I'm going to be on a Himalayan 450. She's going to be on a Gorilla 450. So the two 450 models. So that should be good. So again, these are all going to be edited when I get a moment to go on as tour Thursdays. And then the reviews are going to stay on the Sundays because the reviews get views. The reviews are the moneymaker. Like, it's so funny. People cry out for the tours, but then no one bloody watches them. So, you know, like they want to see them, but then if I just did tours, I probably couldn't do this, you know, as effectively full time because you need to do the reviews. But luckily for me, where I differ from a few YouTubers is I'm not jaded by the reviews. I love the reviews. I love learning about the bikes. I love figuring out what I like, what I don't like about the bikes. Whereas a lot of them are just like, I hate doing reviews. I want to do my passion projects, but I can't. But I think because I've always said I'm a bit of a anything two wheels goes channel. I never pigeonholed myself into just being a review.
Can I ask you about those reviews then? Obviously, we're not going to review veganism, right? We're not going to get into that. But in terms of manufacturers who are knocking on your door to give you bikes to borrow to obviously, hopefully, review in a nice way, what happens if you ride a bike and it's not a dream Suzuki or you haven't enjoyed it? Is that very difficult then to be very honest? Because you know you're going to upset some people or are you very black and white. If I don't like it, I'm telling it truthfully.
Well, yeah. I feel, though, like nowadays it's quite easy for a viewer. It's almost like a cheat code because they don't actually really make a bad bike. Yeah. There is just so much that's subjective. And there are so many elements of a bike, and I can be honest about my experience with that bike, but it necessarily won't reflect what the person watching it will think because they're not a 5'4" stumpy-legged creature. So they'll be all right. You know, they won't have the same struggles or gripes that I have. So I think as long as I'm honest about how I feel about things, but then I try and not let my personal biases get in the way of things because I could get on a GB350 Honda, right, which everyone's raving about, and be like, ah, it's only 20 horsepower, it's so underpowered, blah, blah, and like just go on like the sensationalist, clickbaity, you know, what were Honda thinking, blah, blah. But really, that's just my personal bias as someone that kind of likes, you know, a little bit of, bah, you know, a little bit of go, when there are people that don't require, you know, a crazy fast bike. They want something that looks pretty. They want something that, you know, they can potter around on. So who am I to absolutely dog that bike all because I don't think it's powerful? What, for me, yeah, fair enough. But, you know, you can't just go about it like that's your opinion, that's the only one that matters, and it's just slow no one by it. Do you know what I mean? Because just everybody is so diversely different in what they want out of things. So I feel like in that sense, you can be quite factual about things, but you can also be honest in what you like and what you don't like. And I don't think manufacturers can kind of be mad at that because ultimately you're getting eyes on the bike, whether you like it or not. And also if you don't like a bike or certain aspects of it, then people will want to take it out and see for themselves and be like, she's talking absolute garbage. For example, I did a review. I work closely with Halliwell Jones Motorrad in Chester. Cracking BMW dealership, you know, the staff there are all amazing and they're very good at getting me out on bikes and stuff like that. Well, I took out their M1000 XR motorcycle, which is like 200 brake horsepower, you know, hyper tourer. And my conclusion was I would never tour on this touring bike. Like, arguably, they might be mad that I said that, but ultimately, there's probably somebody out there that doesn't want it for touring, they just want a long-legged, really ridiculous bike. In my opinion, that it's not a great tourer won't sway them in the slightest. So you've just got to be true to yourself without kind of... I feel like there's ways of delivering that you don't like things. And I feel like a lot of people go down the sensationalist route for the views and then, you know, ruin relationships. But it always makes me laugh because you see things... You see things like some YouTubers will be like, I don't go on launches, blah, blah, blah. And then you see the echo chamber of comments where it's like, oh, yeah, they get the free butter, so they're not going to say anything negative about it, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, do you think it's any different for the person in the UK that's getting the bike dropped off to the door?
So true.
Do you think that's any different? Like, at least I'm getting a suntan.
Yeah.
It's well, so maybe true. Not in some cases. So but true. Do you know what I mean? Like, so ultimately, you've just got to do things in a way that you're happy and you're true to yourself. And you know what? Skeptics out there, you're never going to appeal to everyone. And that's the hardest thing that I've learned as a people pleaser. But, and that's fine. They don't have to like you. They don't even have to watch you. They can just watch other people who maybe do rant about things and they're like, yeah, that guy's super honest. And it's like, that's fine, but that's just not my approach.
I think as well, when you see how YouTube does work and you see the headline of that this is the worst bike I've ever ridden, and then part of you goes, oh, that's not going to be what, you know what I mean, what it's designed to suck you in for. And you're absolutely right about the subjective way that you do it, Kate, because you mentioned being on a Himalayan doing the North Coast 500. Maybe a GS Adventure 1300 rider would go, well, I'd never go one of them, but for some people, that'll be the right touring bike. For others, it won't be the right touring bike. And whether you enjoy it or don't enjoy it, or that subjective take on it really does help to, I think, inform someone's opinion, not necessarily sway someone's opinion. It informs their opinion, doesn't it?
Yeah, like I'm not trying to sell anything. I'm not getting paid by any of the manufacturers. And I would never do that because then I do think that, you know, unless it was like for, you know, like a reel or something like that, where you're not necessarily selling anything, you're just being a part of something and you're getting paid like a rate or a day rate or something like that. That's fine, I understand that and things like that. But when you are a review channel, I think when you start, you know, taking money from manufacturers direct, that's a bit, ooh, like credibility kind of goes down the drain a little bit. Whereas I think if you work with dealerships and you can, you know, maybe, you know, get paid from them, I think you have to be very, very specific in what they are getting. You are getting access to my audience and my reach. You are not getting access to a wholly positive review. Because it's in their interest to allow you to be free in what you want to say with your pros and your cons, because ultimately nobody is going to trust anything that you say if you just say how amazing everything is. And I think in the long term, you know, that it's very important to just
credibility,
think.
Longevity, yeah. That's where it comes from, correct?
Yeah, but no, I'd never take money from a manufacturer. I just don't like that personally.
Honestly, It's been absolutely brilliant listening to you, and we are
so jealous. Hey, I'm so jealous.
We are so jealous.
Are you going to be one of them haters like, get back in the kitchen?
I'm the only one in the kitchen. I am actually in the kitchen right now.
I love it.
Good, Ewan. Good, Ewan.
Yeah, we're going to finish with the big one. This is a question we love to ask brilliant guests like yourselves, and I think I know one of the answers, but we want your dream fantasy ride. So we want to know, where are you riding? On what bike you are riding, with whom is your company? And I think it's going to be Big Mike there. And if there was a soundtrack, what would you be listening to? So obviously you've ridden all around the world on the best bikes. So it doesn't have to be something you've done before. It could be something that you look forward to. But what would be your dream fantasy ride? What bike, what person with, what music do you listen to? And where is that ride?
Oh my gosh, what a question. Sorry, I can't say that, can I? What a flipping question. Okay.
It's got a mic though, surely. Mike's going to be the
100%.
We got that. 100%. We know that. Right.
Yeah. Man is the telepathic soulmate of the situation. Yeah. It's got to be Mike.
And he'd probably go on the same road that you're going to choose anyway, wouldn't he? Because you're so in tune. He's going to love what you've chosen to. You're in charge of this tour. You're choosing it.
Correct.
It's so tricky because, like, with recent launches, I've gone to countries that, like, I've never been before, or I've gone to places that I've never ridden, and I'm finding new unexplored roads that are absolutely amazing. And then I think, well, the world is so big and I haven't explored any of it. So how can I say what the fantasy is when I don't know what the world is capable of until I'm on it? I don't know. Do you know what? It could
be Bolton. It could just be around where you live now.
Oh, hell no.
No,
nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. I've got one local road that's like 4 miles long, and it's the only good road. Like, I feel like a bike for me that I'd want to ride would be a Super Duke, just because it's my favourite bike, but I just love it so much. I don't know, like, there's lots of Spanish launches where the roads are just infinitely twisted and the sun is shining. And that's where I could just ride those roads forever and a day and be like, I'm living the dream. So I don't know. I guess anything twisty with a nice climate on a Super Duke. Mike could be on another crazy Piper Naked, although Mike has skill on a motorcycle that I could only dream of. So he can do all the cool stuff and I can watch in awe and be like, wah! So yeah, I don't know. But also, it would be cool to get on, I don't know, something ridiculous like a Honda Dax and like go around crazy broken roads of like, I don't know, like the Himalayas or something. And you know, like you see people posting content around from the other side of the world where there's like massive drops and like loads of gravel and it's all very like atmospheric and crazy. Like I feel like that could be amazing as well. So I don't know, I guess because I'm constantly surprised by roads that I get to experience, I don't know what the goal is. I don't know.
Well, maybe that's your fantasy ride. Maybe you and Mike just get on a bike and you just go and you're going to explore the world and you're going to find it. But would there be any soundtrack? Would you want to be listening to music, or are you good just with the nature?
See, I love like just the sound of nature, the sound of the engine, stuff like that. I'm a bit of a freak, really. Like, I'll go on flights completely like raw dog it. I'll have no headphones. I'll have no book. I'll just be sat there like this. And my mates are like, are you well? And I'm like, I don't know. but I'm just getting through life. So I don't really need like any background noise, but Mike would not want my music taste. I mean, I love Eminem, like really do, but I like my rap. I'm like the nerdiest, like wrong demographic, but I just like, I'll be out there like, wow, like going for it with my Nicki Minaj blaring. It's so cringy. Mike's like, please stop. So we couldn't have my playlist because Mike would want to like throw his Cardo off a cliff. But maybe, I don't know, something chill like Red Hot Chili Peppers. Cool. You know, like you can't go wrong with them. They're just like good road trip music.
Yeah. I think that we've had so many answers, Kate, over so many episodes, but no, I've not had one that's so reflective of the person we've just spent 45 minutes talking to. And I mean that in absolutely
the best. Scatty-brained.
No, but a world and a thought process with absolutely no boundaries of why not? Why can't I do that? Why can't I do that? I'll go and do it. It's fine.
You're so clearly ambitious. You will find the dream ride. The fantasy ride is out there. You don't know where it is, but you will search it out because that's your personality. Loved it.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, somehow. That's exactly what that your approach to life will figure it out somehow. There you go.
Adapt and overcome.
Exactly.
Cockroach-like skin. My soft skin is gone.
Cockroach Kate, anyway.
Cockroach Kate, yes. That should have been the YouTube name, man. Should have been the YouTube name. I'm in too deep now.
In too deep, too many followers. There's no time.
I think Cockroach Kate and Bike Share might, you know, they might be like...
Not the same ring to it. Maybe that phone call 3 years ago might have gone vastly different. What's your handle going to be? Cockroach Kate. No, sorry, we can't do that. Sadly, that is about it for this week's full chat, powered by the aforementioned Bikeshaw, as UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance, and so much more.
Thanks to today's guest. It truly has been an absolute blast. I've loved every minute. Thank you so much to the one and only username Cockroach Kate. Brilliant.
Cockroach Kate, thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
As ever, thank you so much for everybody who's tuned in and listened. Until next time, goodbye.